Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Stansberry Radio Network.
I'm really grateful to everyone who listens to my podcast. You let me do what I love. So to thank you for listening, I'm giving away 100 copies of Gary's new book. It's really easy to enter. All you have to do is subscribe to my podcast, The James Altucher Show, on iTunes, and then rate and review it. Easy. Oh, and then afterwards, just email me at win.jamesaltucher@gmail.com or tweet me at jaltucher or anything really. Just let me know you did it. All the details are on my website. Good luck. I hope you win one of these 100 books. They are excellent. And thank you. I can't believe it. I got Gary Vaynerchuk in the studio. Gary, your book comes out tomorrow. It's hashtag Ask Gary V.
Yes.
You excited?
Yes.
The fourth book?
Yes. Actually, fifth. The
fifth?
Wine, you know, but that's
you know,
my
I
fault.
Don't know about
I never
that first
talk,
book.
I never talk about the poor wine book, but yes, it's my fourth business book.
How'd that wine book do?
Pretty well. I mean, it didn't make the New York Times bestselling list as the business books did, so I guess not as well. But it was so weird. Like, I mean, I was doing a YouTube show when people didn't even know what YouTube was, and it led to a book deal. It was just, the whole experience was surreal. It did really nicely, but like, I mean, I'll probably sell more copies of this book from this podcast than maybe that wine book sold. So, I mean, from a business standpoint, maybe not as well.
Well, I remember your wine library show.
Yes.
Because people were using it as an example, like, look at this crazy guy doing this wine show. It's like going through the roof.
Yes.
And that was really how you first sort of broke out and used kind of a social media channel to promote a separate business, like an offline business.
Yeah, I mean, I had, you know, and you know this, in the early days of 2006, 7, 8, 9, when people needed a case study for social media bringing money to the table, what's the ROI, that was the example, right? And that was YouTube and Twitter execution, and I became, no question, a case study for a lot of people at a lot of conferences.
Yeah, because you would give these wine lessons. So I want to get into your book, mm-hmm. hashtag Ask Gary V, but I have a question about wine.
Great.
So just like
I mean, we can talk about wine in the New York Jets the whole hour. I mean, I'm, you know, I don't, we don't,
no,
you know,
no,
I appreciate
I have
the book
about
stuff,
this.
But like, I'm thrilled to go there.
So
I read this study where people, these wine sommelier, I don't know how you say it, wine experts, were given blindfolded and given glasses of white wine and red wine without any they were all the same temperature and they couldn't tell the difference between white and red.
Yes.
So is there value of being like a wine expert? Like how much of wine is real and how much of it is scam?
I wouldn't call
And you
it
address
scam.
This a little bit
yeah,
in the book, by the way.
I wouldn't call it scam. I would call it's subjective, right? Like meaning, like, I don't know, do you love Bone Thugs and Harmony?
No.
I love them.
Okay.
There you go. How much is music a scam? Like it's really that. It's people's opinions. Now, this is why I think I broke out in the wine business.
But Bone Thugs and Harmony, as opposed to Wu-Tang Clan, I could say, well, they do this and this, and I like this and this.
Yes.
But if you can't actually tell the difference between different wines, is it taste or is it just some kind of branding thing?
So it's, I mean, everything in life is branding, right? Like, you know, I mean, if everybody was blind, you know, then people wouldn't dress the way they do or put on makeup.
I must
or
be blind then.
You know, so I think there's a ton of bullshit artists in wine, but I think, James, I think there's a ton of bullshit artists in entrepreneurship. I mean, one of the biggest kicks I'm on right now is all these posers on Instagram taking pictures of, you know, fancy cars and putting cash on the bed and saying, like, this is the lifestyle and this is what entrepreneurship's about.
Right. So I would argue there. I agree with you, but I would argue there they're doing lifestyle marketing, meaning this is my lifestyle.
They're lying. They're lying.
I believe that in most cases.
They're renting a car.
Yes.
For the day. And they're innuendoing that they own a $500,000 car, but they don't. They're asking their rich buddy to take $100,000 cash out of the bank and put it on a bed and then giving it back to him and then he or her, and then they're putting it back in the bank.
Right.
So I don't think they're selling lifestyle marketing. I think they're posing as a lifestyle marketer, just like I think some people pose as a wine expert.
Right. So and I actually think I know exactly what you're talking about and who.
Yes.
But we'll talk about that later.
Well, the truth is, I'm not. I'll be very blunt with you. I'm not referring to anybody. There are thousands, tens of thousands of people selling this entrepreneurial lifestyle on Instagram and Snapchat right now.
Yeah. No, I agree. And they're making money, which is a sad thing. Their main courses on how to do a business is basically based on them building a business of selling courses on how to do a business.
The number one thing I'm passionate about right now to separate the people that sell people on selling people and have never built an actual business versus somebody like Jason Fried or Tony Hsieh who built 37 Signals, who built Zappos or Lazaro or you or me. We've built actual businesses.
Right.
I have to believe that that is more valuable than somebody who teaches you how to create a $90 ebook.
Well, I think you've done a really great job of leveraging one thing from the other. So the wine, your knowledge about wine and your family's wine store, you were able to leverage into the YouTube channel.
Yes.
And then the success of the YouTube channel, you were able to leverage into building VaynerMedia, which is how to do what I did, basically create content marketing to build the value of your business.
Yes.
So when you started VaynerMedia, were you scared? Like, oh my God, this is out of my, like, I knew how to do it for wine, but now Pepsi wants help. Like, were you nervous at that point?
No, because I have a huge ego and I have enormous confidence and I'm not scared of anything when it comes to business. I was scared in high school to hit on pretty girls. I'm scared to go snowboarding because I'm not good at it. I would never jump out of a plane. I'm scared to do drugs. I'm scared of a lot of things. I'm scared of bears in the wild. You know, I'm scared of getting in the ring with Evander Holyfield. Like, there's a lot of things I'm scared of. The only thing in the world I'm not scared of is anything to do remotely with something around business.
Well, just to underline that a little, a failure you've had in business? Because we've all had,
in
we've all experienced failures.
So when I was leveraging from Wine Library TV to this new world, I started VaynerMedia. 2009 is my greatest year and my worst year from a business and life standpoint. 2009 is the year my daughter Misha was born. Amazing. 2009 is the year VaynerMedia started. Amazing. 2009 is the year Crush It came out. Amazing. What happened was in May of 2009, when Misha was born, when VaynerMedia was born, I decided to transition out of running Wine Library and I was going to do other things. And think of me as somebody who was in a relationship for 20 years and got out of it. I wanted to hook up with every business in the world. Right? I literally started Vayner. I wrote Crush It and started building my brand. I started something called Obsessed TV where I was producing another video blog. It did not succeed. My fault, not Samantha Edis's fault. I started Forest, a designer, developer, social network. That was my fault, not Kyle's fault, because I was the partner, even though he was the active partner. I innuendoed that I would do more than I did. I bought Corked, a wine social network, Facebook for wine. That was more my fault than Lindsay's fault. I innuendoed that I would do more than I did for that business. I invested in a lot of things that weren't called Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr, because now I was an investor. And that after making three incredible investments out the gate, I made five or seven bad ones. So I basically, 2009, back half, 6 months of the back half of 09, I was like a fat kid looking at a lot of cake. I was trying to eat all of it. And I exposed myself of not being able to do all those things.
And how have you adjusted since to kind of, not that you can eliminate failures, because I think that happens every day in business.
Dude, I'm in the business of micro failures.
Well, I think experimentation is very important.
I do it all day long. I did seven major million-dollar agendas last year for VaynerMedia, and only two won and five failed.
What do you mean? What's a million-dollar agenda?
VaynerMedia started doing sampling last year.
What's that? Like surveying people?
No. Sour Patch Kids comes out with a new gum, and we were going to empower digital sampling. So don't go to a football game and just give them out randomly. Spend the extra money to deliver it to people that actually want it and collect data and collect IP. Got it?
Yeah.
We started a live events division. We would activate for you Pepsi and ABI, Anheuser-Busch InBev.
What does it mean activate?
At Coachella, we would tell you our idea, and you would pay us hundreds of thousands of dollars to do the water balloon contest idea. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Neither of those succeeded.
How did you judge success on that?
We made money. Mm-hmm. And we're a business. That's how we judge it.
But I mean, how would you, like, did they just not pay you for events? No,
we didn't sell them well.
Okay.
We didn't build good infrastructure around it. I didn't support it well enough. The people that ran it, didn't do a good enough job because they had different ideas or different things. The organ didn't integrate into the body. Mm-hmm. Video and paid did. Paid media, us doing the buying for our brands on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram, us doing video, producing videos that live on Facebook and YouTube. Those things succeeded massively. But I have on my P&L huge financial losses from those two, and I have gains from the other two. It's just a net game, James. And so is being an entrepreneur, period.
Well, this brings to another question, which is, everybody says if you have a business, you have to focus. But also, the flip side of it is you also have to experiment. You have to constantly experiment every day.
I think you have to focus on offense. And too many times when people say you have to focus, they mean defense.
Okay, so
you want me to expand on that?
Yeah.
You have to focus.
And by the way, I want you to expand on that because you also say, that every day you're trying to figure out ways
to put myself out of business.
Put yourself out of business.
Yes.
Which sounds like defense.
No. It's actually unbridled. It's pure. It's the purest form of offense. What do I mean by that? Couple things. When people say you have to focus, what a lot of people interpret that as is don't innovate. That's how I say it. Mm-hmm. Focus. Hey, you do social media really well, Gary. Like you guys do. VaynerMedia started as a community management company. Focus would have been stay in wine. Open up 50 more stores in the wine business instead of going into the social media stuff, right? Focus means whatever's making you money right now, triple down on that. And what I say is be on the offense and put yourself out of business is look how you're making money right now and think about the vulnerabilities around that.
Okay, so let's think about the vulnerabilities. Like you just mentioned that media buying across social media has been working for you.
And digital.
What if I do media buying and I charge 5%, over the cost of the media and you might charge 10%? Is that a way I'm going to put you out of business?
Absolutely not. You can sell somebody Nikes for $300 or you can sell them private label sneakers at Walmart for 40 cents. Like show me the results. Like we have that happen.
Right.
Clients say James's shop is now offering 5%, we're 10%. I'm like, good. What are you trying to make happen? Views, sales, let's do a bake off. I actually am quite crazy about competition. I would say in that scenario, you know what? First of all, James is a friend. I actually know him. So he might actually pull something off. Let's bring James to the party. You should actually hire James and let's do a bake off. And let's find out if you can get more with mine versus his, and is the 10% worth it versus the 5%?
By the way, I found that in the times various businesses I've started, that the best technique for sales is to recommend your competitors.
100%.
So, because then it builds, and not even in a bad way, do it sincerely.
It's trust.
Yeah.
And then meritocracy. I'm a meritocracist through and through. If you can do better for Pepsi than I can, then they should hire you.
So, okay, so it's from the book, yes. I gather the main themes. Like, let's say I'm starting from scratch, not only a business, but a career.
Yes.
It seems like there's a direct path, which is learn, then create a great content, then create community around that content, then have calls to action for people to buy. And that's what you've done really successfully with wine.
Yes.
You spent 10 years learning.
Yes.
You created content, which is the wine library. Then there
yes.
was community around that.
Yes.
Then call to action, buy this wine.
Yes.
And you're honest about it every step of the way.
Yes.
And the same thing with social media. That's how these
yes.
these books come about.
Yes.
So what if somebody says, oh my God, that could take like 20 years though, or 15 years. Like it took Gary Vaynerchuk
yes.
10 years to learn.
Yes.
How can I speed up the process?
I don't think anything valuable comes fast. And so I just think that my method is much more tried and true. There's a lot more of the Gary Vaynerchuk success story than the overnight 24 months, everything happened for you success story.
Right. So in a lot of the content marketing, I think the key is establishing that trust so you can build community. So the community goes from whatever they were at before to, oh no, here's the guy I can actually trust. And that involves a certain type of sincerity as opposed to here are the top 10 things you know need to know about wine. You kind of have to start off with here's what I didn't know about wine. Now here's what I'm learning. So how do you kind of like break into sincerity? Because I think that is the real challenge for a lot of content marketers. They're still marketing as opposed to content.
I think that's right. And I think you've got it pegged. I think the North Star has to be truth. I mean, it's quite simple.
How do you know it for yours? Like, let's say someone starts out, they might not have all the knowledge, but they don't know. How do they know they're being sincere? Like, where's the line? What are the?
Oh, I think they.
I don't think there's a technique for sincerity.
I don't think. You know, look. If you do not know what the truth or not the truth is within your own body of your own self, well, then there's nothing I can do or you can do to help anybody. I would say 99% of the people know the truth. When you come out the gate and you're 23 years old and you want to be a life coach, you know that you haven't lived life yet. It's not super complicated. Like,
right.
Like when you want to teach people how to make money at 23 because somebody who's 53 told you this is the quick way to make money, but you know that you've never made money, like you know that to be true.
So, you know, it's funny because the premise of your book is
yes.
Ask Gary Vee. People ask
yes.
you questions. And because you've had so much experience,
yes,
you've been able to answer them.
Yep.
I'm sure you've gotten this question a lot because I've gotten it a lot, although I didn't quite see it worded exactly like this in the book.
Go ahead.
People say, I'm 26 years old. I'm 27 years old. I haven't yet achieved success in life, but I really want to. What should I do? What's your answer to that?
Patience.
But they don't have it.
Then they'll lose.
Yeah.
Like to me, it's not super, like I addressed it directly. It's called the chapter on patience. Like I really believe in it. You're right. They don't have it. That's why they won't win, James.
Right.
Like James, do you know what the 1% earners in America make on average a year?
Yes. $867,000 a year.
Nope. $400,000.
Really?
Yep. If you look it up right now, it's $400,000. Think about that.
And funny thing is, I looked it up this morning, actually, for a completely different reason.
Is that true? Well, I wonder. No. It's an important topic for me. That's why I'm asking. Do you know if you possibly? I want to know if I'm right.
I might not have had the right source.
Do you think? Well, not that. Do you think? Do you think you might have done New York?
I don't know.
Because I think it's like here. I'm just going to go to it. Right. So like
top 1% earners.
Right. Here's the 1% on CNN Money, and I've looked at a bunch. They've got this little cute calculator. Right? When you go to 1%, it's 400,000.
That's interesting.
Right? You know, it's funny. Everybody who's listening right now, and I know my audience and I know your audience, right? Or at least somewhat, right?
Yeah.
I don't think they think it's, even think about where you're, like even I didn't think, I thought it was higher. Like 1%, you're the 1% best in the number one market in the world for capitalism. And it's 400,000. I think if a lot of people listening were grounded in that number, instead of a million, instead of more than that, that they would become more patient. I think that we're selling them that they need to make 10 million. Like kids are trying to build a billion-dollar company because of Facebook.
Well, I agree. And so a lot of people think, oh, I've got an idea. I need venture capital, which is the wrong approach.
Crazy.
And you didn't do that approach. Your
nope.
parents didn't do that approach.
Nope.
Like obviously, they didn't raise venture capital for a wine store.
No.
So it's just they built up. And you even mentioned in the book, cash is king.
Yes.
And you also mentioned in the book, though, that build kind of quantity of customers with low margin items so that you could then get them in the door to sell high margin items.
I'm a fan of that.
So does that come into conflict? Like the low margin ultimately doesn't give you a lot of cash.
Cash is king was some profit at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these kids that are building these companies that are funded are burning money. They're not making money. So was, with VaynerMedia, I was giving away at $5,000 a month our services, but my expenses were $4,999. As long as I was profitable, right, then that was okay, and then you can build momentum. When I say cash is king, is like, look, the more money you have, the more you can invest back into the business and things of that nature. And so I definitely believe that most people are grossly underestimating what it takes to actually build a successful business in today's environment. And the kids that are listening that are in the VC world or trying to raise money, they don't realize, so many of them don't realize that they're giving up a percentage of their company, they're giving up control, and they're picking up bad behavior because they don't need to be profitable as quickly, and that becomes a vulnerability.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the biggest problem actually is that they think they need to leave their jobs to start their business. Because look, you were still working at the wine store when you started Wine Library.
That's the whole theme of Crush It, right? 7 p.m. to 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Like be... You know what it all comes down to? You've said it a bunch
here. And there's evidence of this, by the way, that the most successful entrepreneurs are the ones who didn't leave their jobs until their business was already profitable.
Makes a ton of sense.
Their side business.
They had a real – they did it the real – you know, it's so funny. You just said something that I was trying to say. The whole theme
– By the way, I'm going to interrupt you all the time because I know you're a big interrupter.
By the way, I'm super into it. Actually, it makes me feel more comfortable.
All right,
I don't like the pace of like, you ask, I answer.
Yeah.
Like, let's keep interrupting the whole time. Anybody who's listening and has a feel on us is going to enjoy it more anyway. It's practicality, brother. This book's only other title could have been called Practicality, The Blueprint for Entrepreneurship.
Well, okay, so let's take a look at that. So I'm in the cubicle at I'm a marketing manager for Crest Toothpaste,
yes.
And I'm like sick of it.
Yes.
And I want to break out.
Yes.
Incomes are going down.
Yes.
I'm worried about my job because
yes.
they're outsourcing everything
yes.
to China.
Yes.
What should I start to do?
The
or
first
look
thing
at?
You should do? Is you shouldn't have fucking watched House of Cards this entire fucking Saturday. That's the first thing you should do.
Okay.
And when I say that rant...
I did that actually this Saturday.
Great, but guess what? You've won a little bit already.
Right.
You've earned your chance. You're not complaining. If you complain... And by the way, you can make $20,000 a year and not be complaining. So this is not about how much success you've had. This is complaining. This is, oh, woe is me. I'm in this cubicle. You're complaining to yourself. And
right.
even worse, and I know you guys, you're complaining to others. Your spouse, your girlfriend, your brother, your mom. If you are complaining, the first thing that has to happen is the elimination of Madden, the softball team, you know, House of Cards, any, you know, playing game, like leisure. Leisure is what you give up to build, to have the audacity to build your life that you want. So if you didn't watch House of Cards for 13 hours this weekend, it would have given you 13 hours to map out what you're going to do to get out of that job at Crest. I mean, this is a big deal, James.
Okay, I know,
this
I
is
agree.
A big fucking deal.
So step one.
Do you know
one-
why D-Rock's following me right now? Because I want to show everybody that I work 18 goddamn hours a day.
So by the way, I just to mention just what you referred to. So D-Rock works with you. He videotapes you from morning to night.
Yes.
And then you put that out every day?
No, we thought we were going to, which is why it's called Daily V. But and even though D-Rock is the hardest court hustler and we'll go edit at 2 in the morning, we just can't. We're just a two-man show and really most of the work's on him. So, but we're putting out 2 or 3 times a week.
Now, is there a danger of burnout? Like you're
maybe
you
know, for D-Rock, but
you
not
mentioned
for me.
You work 19
not
hours
me.
A day,
not me.
5 days a week, or
Let
six
me phrase,
days a week.
There is a danger. Nothing over the last 20, let's see, 40. Nothing over the last 28 years has indicated it. And one of the biggest reasons I got really healthy mm-hmm. was a heart attack at 42, or you know that kind of scare could have been the prerequisite for me to do that. So I'm really focused on my health. I'm unbelievably mentally happy. I communicate.
What does that mean?
If nothing good happens for me financially or notoriety starting right now, ever again, if this is my apex, this is it. This is the biggest and best financial and brand and awareness and notoriety and admiration that I ever have. I'm unbelievably okay with it. Equally, I think I'm a piece of crap and I've got enormous places to go.
Why do you think you're a piece of crap?
Because I'm hungry. Because I feel like there's so much more in me. Because I think I'm all time. I really do.
Okay, so now, so back to the...
this is getting dark. but it's true.
And we'll get to that. We'll get to that because you...
This is what you... you're such a soothing character. You get the real stuff out of me.
But you could be hungry without feeling like a piece of crap also.
I'll be honest with you. I think I sabotage myself and come off real hard because I like being doubted. I like that there's 15% of the people listening right now that aren't liking me right now in this interview, that I'm coming at it too hard. I like that. I'm intrigued by that because I like to earn them back. I love the climb. I love the journey. I love losing. You should see my face after we lose pickup basketball games when I play with my homies and my employees every morning. It's such a high because I know we get to play the next one and I'm ready. Like, I love it. I love climbing the mountain. The journey is so much more rewarding to me than the actual. My wife has a funny joke with me. When we land, like, you know, like the plane lands and bounces a little bit in like a trip when it's just the two of us, a vacation, right? I look at her and I go, that's a sour face, everybody. Because the second the vacation starts is the second I don't like it as much. I like the week before. I live for the anticipation. I'm quite, I like flirting more than hooking up. Like, I love the chase. I love the game.
So, okay. So let's get back to the woman or the man sitting in the cubicle.
Yes.
They eliminate
Johnny
House of Cards.
Crest.
Yeah, Johnny Crest. He eliminates House of Cards, eliminates the softball game. He's ready to go. What's next?
Self-awareness. And it's why, you know, as you see on the cover, one entrepreneur's take on, you know, leadership, social media, and self-awareness, and a lot of other words, but self-awareness bubbled up to the core title. I believe that self-awareness is the single best number one attribute anyone could ever be gifted with. Better than being good looking, better than being super smart, self-awareness.
What does that entail, though? Because people don't really know if they're self-aware or not.
Yeah, the truth is, this is kind of...
it's a constant journey.
It's funny, and it's kind of where I cut off. I talk emphatically and with enormous bravado of the things I understand, and I hedge and punt things I don't understand. I'm very comfortable in admitting that I don't know the science behind self-awareness. I don't know the anthropology or psychology around it. I don't know how it's taught. I just know it's the thing. Right? I just know it's the absolute thing. When you know what you're good at and what you're bad at, if, you know, James, I think, you know, your self-deprecation to me, the way you roll from afar, indicates enormous self-awareness. When you understand yourself, you're able to navigate the world.
But let me ask you a question.
Please.
So a lot of these things, awareness are kind of, okay, what am I good at? What am I bad at?
Yes.
What do I want out of life? But could there be a deeper level in the sense that, like, you write up constantly about how, okay, I want a long term, and I'm patient for that. You said this, I'm patient for this. I want to buy the New York Jets. That's
yes.
Like, you say that everywhere.
Yes.
So now, could self-awareness be, hey, even if I don't buy the New York Jets, I'm still going to be happy? Or could you be setting yourself up for a long-term fall and disappointment by being too aware of the fact that you want to buy the Jets?
So I think the
like,
Jets...
Could you change goals to be more self-aware?
I know that what drives me professionally and as an entrepreneur is the journey of buying the New York Jets. If I buy the New York Jets or not, not only... even if I amass the $10 billion of net worth to be able to do it, I might not pull it off. Woody Johnson may sell it to somebody else. When and if he passes away and I'm old and ready to do it, you know, his family may do something else with it. Like, I don't know. Like, to me, I really want it. I'm focused on it. My behavior is predicated on it. I sold a piece of VaynerMedia to Stephen Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, because it got me into the football family. Like, I'm making decisions because of it. I know what my North Star is. But I won't be crippled if I don't pull it off because I know there's so many, I'm self-aware enough to know there's so many, you know, other variables that will be part of the equation.
So do you think goal setting is good as a driving force or?
It is for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm self-aware enough to know that it is for me. I'm self-aware enough to know that I want to work hard for something big. I'm self-aware enough to know that I like losing. So if I don't pull it off, that will be what I talk about. You know,
So what's the tech? Like, so again, Johnny Crest, how does it become more self-aware?
The only thing I figured out, I'm sure there's people that want to sell people on their assessments. I don't know. The one thing I do think has worked, and I've talked about this and I've gotten emails that it has worked, this is my only hack on this, is to do some sort of crazy Zen retreat where, and you don't have to go somewhere. This is actually a weird conversation. You round up the 8 people that are closest to you. So Johnny Crest goes to his work wife. And what a work wife is for people that don't work in corporate America is Johnny Crest, when he was an intern, came in with Susan Crest and they were just fresh out of school and they were friends and they've been working at Crest together for 15 years. And they're just friends. And they're work husband and wife, right? I would go to her. I would go to his actual wife. I would go to his grandparents, his mother, his single best friend from third grade, his fraternity brother. And I would get them all together and I would have a 2-hour conversation. And the first hour and a half is completely predicated on Johnny Crest saying to his mom or to his best friend, hey, I'm ready for a life change. I need something from you and it's going to be very hard on you. I want you to tell me everything you think that I'm good at and what you think I'm bad at. And the truth is, I don't think you're going to tell me the truth because you love me. And so you're going to hedge. So I'm giving you permission now to say things that you think may end our friendship or our relationship, because in this one moment, I'll be okay with it because I'm using the data to make my life happier. And even though my feelings will be hurt when you say I'm lazy or I'm not that talented or I'm awkward socially, it's okay because this is the one moment in time where I need it. So you spend an hour and a half, and it may take you longer, it might take you months to actually get that person into that safe zone. And then you leave 30 minutes if you get there fast for any questions. And then you do the assessment and you take the data from these 8 to 10 people and you finally, for the first time in your life, Johnny Crest, decide you don't live life hoping and wishing you were something. You start for the first time in your life actually deciding what you are and navigating around that.
So Johnny Crest does this and people tell him, oh, you've played it safe for too long.
Yes, that's a good one.
You have too much, you know, you watch binge watch House of Cards, you go out late at night on Thursdays, whatever. So now he starts to change. He's like, okay, they're right. I want to do bigger and better things in my life. What's next? What's the next practical step? Because that's a good practical step.
Well, I actually think the next practical step is pretty interesting. I think that at that point, Johnny Crest wants to decide if he wants to go for it or not. Because I actually think 8 out of 10 times Johnny Crest, after that process, takes a step back and says, you know what? I like getting drunk with my buddies on Thursday night. I like House of Cards. I think it's kind of cool. And he may then realize, huh, I'm actually okay. Like, yeah, I'm not going to be Mark
Zuckerberg.
But
let's say he's not.
Okay, well then he's not. Then he decides what I think, back to crush it, he tries to build a business around something he loves. Because if he does that, it won't be work.
And how do you find, and you address this a little in the book, but how do you find, most people don't know what they love.
They do.
They're confused.
That's not true. Because
you knew. You had a great sense.
No.
Wine,
no.
Jets,
I understand. But I didn't love wine. I loved entrepreneurship. My parents had a liquor store. I backed into it. Johnny's now 38. Did we make him 38?
Let's make him 38.
Johnny's now 38. And Johnny watches NASCAR every weekend. Johnny does mixed martial art. Like, Johnny has to look at what he does when he's not working and build a business around that.
Let's say he watches House of Cards every weekend. So
he does other things. I don't think that's a good one.
Okay.
But it could be. By the way, if that is it, maybe he becomes a social commentator on television in a 2017 world. Maybe what Johnny does is becomes the modern day Siskel and Ebert for television and makes 89,000. Let's say Johnny, 15 years at Crest. Let's say Johnny makes $213,000 a year, right? Like, what he has to do is decide that, is he willing to make $87,000 a year but be a shitload happier and downsize his home or not go on as many vacations? These are choices, my man.
You know, it's funny because it reminds me of, and you might know this guy because he's involved with sports and football, but Matt Berry, who's the fantasy sports guy on ESPN.
Good friend.
I am familiar. Yeah, you know, he was a great screenwriter, but gave it all up to basically blog for like $100 a post on fantasy sports. And now he's the ESPN sports commentator. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's a good example.
And by the way, there's a lot of
And there were no fantasy sports bloggers then at all.
And James, there's so many people that didn't make it as big as him. This is back to the $400,000 club. Do you know how many people email me every day from Crush It and say, I read it, it inspired me, and now I have a pottery business that makes $88K, James. Here's the punchline. They were making $75K. Let me phrase. I'll give you a different one. They were making $100K, but they're home every day. They see their kids. They've lost 20 pounds. They're happy. If they want to take a 4-day vacation, they can. Like, this is, we have to, let me stay here. I'm sorry. Because I got
to
get this off.
I was about to interrupt you.
I know you are.
We're letting you stay there.
This is a big one for me, man. We have to reprogram, rebrand, and relook at entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship is freedom. It doesn't mean making $1 million. It means freedom. Doing what you want to do when you want to do it is much more valuable than giving up $30,000 because you can't buy a bigger TV.
So this is a great point, because You talk in the book this very powerful metaphor. You spend time in the clouds and spend time in the dirt. So
yes.
The clouds is kind of the big picture, and that's related to the self-awareness.
Yes.
What do I want to do? What are the
yes.
overall broad ways
the
I'll
blueprint,
change my life?
Right? Like the
so
religion,
on.
The way up there.
And the dirt is in the weeds.
Being a
executing.
Being a practitioner.
So now we're going to get into the dirt of this question.
Okay.
You're Johnny Crest.
Yes.
You've changed your blueprint. You've listened to everybody, and you found what you love.
UFC. You want to win in, let's use UFC. You want to win in UFC.
Okay, you want to win in the UFC. But I want to use a different
one. Okay, go ahead.
I want to use the Jets.
Okay.
So let's say someone just loves the Jets.
Let's do it.
Okay, because you haven't done this.
No,
you,
I have not.
I love the Jets. It's the only thing I love. Absolutely.
Let me give you some crazy practitioner advice.
Okay.
This is going to blow your mind. You're going to be blown away by what I'm about to say.
Okay, good.
Do you know this? Do you know that if you buy stuff on eBay and resell it on Amazon, that there's a VIG right now in the marketplace supply and demand curve, and you could probably make $50,000 a year just buying and selling jet stuff from eBay and then reposting it on Amazon?
I did not know that.
Cool. There you go. Oh. For everybody who's listening, I literally, if you're willing to work 18 hours a day on this, which means you're sitting on your computer, your phone, and you're following things on eBay, and you're buying them, and then they ship to you or you repost them and you ship it there and use the Amazon marketplace and you resell them on a VIG. I bought this Jets jersey for $18. I list it for $24.99 on Amazon.
And how will you drive? How will people find your just searching? Just Amazon search?
Supply and demand of attention. The number one thing I live on.
And let's say.
But stick with me how wild this is. I just literally, and this is just straight up true, and you'll see comments in social that this is true. This is true. That if you want to do this for 18 hours a day, and by the way, everybody who's listening right now, we've got some people hanging out there and they're smiling. It's interesting, right? Like if you really love rock and roll, isn't it fun to just listen to rock and roll, go on eBay, buy rock and roll memorabilia and t-shirts and buy it and then repost it on Amazon and make $10 profit? And like today you made $90, tomorrow you made $400 and you're going to get better at it. You're going to get better at it. I literally just gave everybody an absolute real life blueprint on an arbitrage that exists in our society in America right now. That is probably a minimum, if you really work 18 hours a day, a $40,000, $35,000, even if you're kind of average, $35,000 profit business. Now, for a lot of people, that's not enough, but that's year one. I think by year two or three, most people listening right now, if they're talented, especially if they're a little bit of a marketer, if they really understand the Jets or really understand Rolling Stones or really understand UFC or really understand Pokemon, that they will really be able to get to $100,000 in profit by year three.
Well, let's talk about, in your path to career success is learn and then content marketing. So it's not just
– Correct.
So not just doing the eBay, Amazon arbitrage.
Well, because you're smart.
Then start blogging.
Are you kidding? Of course. Now,
right.
Now you're getting paid $5,000 to show up at Pokemon Con. Now you're writing a guide on Pokemon. Now you're selling t-shirts.
And you should keep pointing people to your Amazon sellers page.
You got it, man.
As opposed to the eBay page where it's being sold.
You got it, man. Now, putting yourself out of business – let's go through Johnny Crest's career. He listened to the James Show. He couldn't believe it. He did it. Holy crap. He meals both of us in 3 years. He goes, you guys are I'm going to buy 100 copies of both of your upcoming 7th books because your podcast, James, and Gary, your advice, you did it. And then the arbitrage closes between eBay and Amazon.
Right.
Then everybody listened to this podcast and everybody's doing it.
Right.
And the market breaks. That's putting yourself out of business. That's recognizing in year two when you're making $64,000 and you're super happy that you need to start blogging and start a podcast.
Whoa.
Or start Pokemon Con and be in event marketing because you're going to become vulnerable to that being the only revenue stream.
Well, look at your own example where content marketing, again, on the wine library actually led to other opportunities for you. Not only led to VaynerMedia, but then VaynerMedia led to other opportunities, which is all the investments you've made, you know, based on contacts you've had through VaynerMedia. So it seems like you're always leveraging the thing you're doing to the next thing.
Because I'm scared. I'm practical. I don't want to – and this is what – listen, the only advice I've ever given in my life – James, I'm super undereducated. I was a DNF student in high school. I've read like 4 fucking books. I went to Mount fucking Ida College. Like, I'm not an educated man. I'm very emotionally educated. And the only advice I ever give is predicated on things I've already done. I only give advice based on my reality.
Well, it's funny because then, so after the content marketing, for you, and this is what you mentioned in your first book, Crush It, but you also bring it straight up through this book, Ask Gary V, is community, the importance of community. And you have, I think you have extra energy. It's one thing to write every day or make a YouTube video every day, but then you take that next step, which is responding to the people in your community every day. And what percentage of that is important for, you know, building the business and the brand and so on?
For me, it was very big. It's what I had. I had time in 2009 and 10 and 11. And I used it to my advantage, and I also day trade attention. What does day trading attention means? It means you're always looking for the white space. So in a world where there was all these other experts that had been business experts before me, when Twitter came along, I knew that I was willing to interact with people and they weren't. And what's been crazy is, as my brand has ascended and as I've gotten bigger, I still do it. Because I think it's the white space. I think most people don't interact.
I don't understand, what does white space mean?
White space, I refer to in business terms, means what's everybody else doing that nobody's doing? Do that thing that nobody's doing if you believe it's valuable. I believe that it was valuable for me to say hi to Dale Cruz and say hi to Lorenzo and to Johnny Thompson, right? Like, I thought that was valuable. That made a bigger connection with us that led to success. And by the way, I'm never upset when I put out 190 shows of Ask Gary Vee for free, right? Put out Daily Vee for free, answer questions for free, do all my content for free. And then I've done all these things for Ricky McGee. And then when the book comes out and I ask and they buy zero copies, it doesn't even bother me. This is where people struggle. One of the things that I think that people misunderstand with the jab, 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 right hook philosophy, give, 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 and then ask. Most people think it's give, 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 and then take. Got it? Ask.
Well, I remember, it's funny because I remember the night the Thank You Economy came out. Or I think your book.
Yes.
There, it was your second book or
yes,
third book.
It was
now.
My second.
Third book ahead. After the
yeah,
wine.
Yeah, you got it. Good job, James, following the narrative.
I remember you were on Twitter and you were constantly asking people to buy.
Yes.
You were like directly addressing each person, asking them to buy. And then you were even like meta commenting, like, do you guys see what's happening? Because you were like addressing the Amazon rank.
Yes.
It was like all night you were at it. So that was your ask after like all of the content.
I'm very comfortable going in for the right hook. Mm-hmm. I'm a businessman. Like, I'm very comfortable asking for the business. I'm very comfortable. I'm very comfortable reach out to you and say, hey, I'd love to be on the show. I also know that I've been on the show. Like, you would be stunned what would have happened if you're like, hey, man, like, I don't know, like, you weren't on that long ago. I'd be like, yeah, I get it. Like, that's your, like, nothing phases. I'm such a believer in the market is the market is the market, even at my own expense, that I don't have the gene inside of me of being upset when somebody lets me down or doesn't do a favor, or I did so much for them and then they didn't do a little. I mean, there's somebody right now that popped to mind. I literally got them into a huge investment. They made millions of dollars. Millions, James. I've got that. I helped them get a CFO. I helped, literally helped a relative get a job. Like, the person's been asking, man. I asked for the book here. I don't know, 7 copies? I mean, like, you know, strangers are buying 25.
I bought 100. We're giving away 100.
I've done for this person 100 times more stuff than I've done for you. I mean, but am I crippled? I'm not. It's stunning how that navigates through my mind. What it does is I want to do right by you because of your good. I'm not capable of quantifying negatives. I brush off my losses. I don't even give them the respect they deserve. I hate negative energy. The reason culture is very good at VaynerMedia is I'm crippled by negative energy. If somebody,
so how do you get rid of negative energy?
I fire it, and then if
as
somebody,
soon as you see it, or you give
no,
it
I've got to be calculated. Sometimes it takes 6 months. Sometimes it takes a year. It depends on what piece it is in a puzzle. There's much bigger macro kind of dynamics involved in the decision making. But when I decide that it's negative, at that moment it's done. It may take a year for it to manifest itself. With friends, with business opportunities, with founders that I don't like the way they're navigating me or other board members. Like, once I decide it's over, I may take my time. I'm not the person like my dad that would confront you right in your face and go, you're a fuck face, I'm out of here, and get up and leave, and that's the end of the relationship. That's not my tact.
I guess for me, I don't quite do either. I just sort of eliminate and never talk to them again.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't confront and I don't take my time.
You know what's funny? I used to be that way too. There was a girlfriend that I broke up with that I literally hid in the closet of my dorm room because I didn't want to deal with confrontation. I've matured.
I need to mature.
I've matured in my ability to deal with confrontation. And I would tell you, my little brother helped me with that. I think AJ has a good tact, and that rubbed off on me over the last 7 years. I think there's some general just growing up that happened. And I finally stopped being egotistical. Here's what I mean by that. I used to think that they were better off staying in my ecosystem. versus the alternative. And I realized me not believing in them was, even though maybe I thought they were better off with me because I didn't believe in them and I thought in the real world they'd get eaten up. The truth is, once I made that decision, there was nothing good for them to be in my world either. And so I've come to learn that too.
So I want to get into the dirt a little more as just a final approach here.
Yeah.
So Johnny Crest loves the Jets, makes content about the Jets, does this eBay,
are
Amazon
arbitrage. Real quick, before you go there, are you going to put the title of the show going to be like
Johnny
Gary
Crest?
V and Johnny Crest?
It could be.
It might be. Go ahead. Johnny Crest.
So he's doing all the steps. He's built the community. He's doing the calls to action. Now, really in the dirt, he wants to drive people directly to Amazon. And I usually
before you go there, there's a couple things I want to add.
Sure.
Because one of the things that I love that you're doing, and this is why it's so fun to go on these tours, you go on so many, you're always scared that you're going to say the same thing because you know so many people are listening to all seven of these podcasts. You're doing such a great thing for everybody in your audience right now because we're getting very practical.
Very practical.
And I
yes.
love it. So let's talk about a couple things. We talked about the eBay thing. There's a couple things that I want Johnny Crest to do in parallel. I want him to create his Twitter account. Twitter, even though it's struggling, and it is, still has a big advantage over every other platform. Johnny Crest can absolutely type in Pokemon or rock and roll or UFC in Twitter search and see other people talking about it. And I want him to engage with those people. I also want him to tweet at Dana White and the creator of Pokemon and Pikachu Girl 47, that's the number one influencer on Twitter, and start creating these relationships on social because it's part of the narrative. So cool. I just wanted to give another practical advice.
Twitter searching
people.
Instagram.
And engage Twitter search. Mm-hmm. Instagram, no, because people are not reading their Instagram comments. If somebody's engaging in Twitter, they will see that you're reaching out to them. Now, Pikachu Girl 47 may say, I'm not talking to Johnny Crest, but if you do it 12 times, sometimes they'll think you're a creeper, but once in a while they'll start, you know, rewarding you on that tenacity and you start building relationships. And try to build in value. Don't hit up Pikachu 47 and say, hey, Pikachu 47, tell everybody about my Johnny Crest Amazon account. You know, try to build a relationship. Try to bring them value. When Pikachu 47, and when Pikachu Girl 47 says that she needs something and you happen to be in that town, be like, I got you. Bring value first.
Right. Well, okay. So now, I think that's
right,
great advice.
Cool.
Totally in the weeds.
Yep.
And I don't even normally go this much in the weeds.
No, I get
it's
it.
Too
practical. But you know that you're here with a real fucking practitioner.
But if things are too specific, they're not as evergreen. They might not last like a year from now. But so I have stuff on Amazon.
Yes.
And Amazon.
You have to do nothing. That advice I gave, you have to do nothing. I know what you're doing right now, and you're right. Normally, you have to figure out how to throw the right hook and what are the tactics. Ironically, the reason I gave everybody my best piece of advice for the quickest $1,000, $100,000 a year that you can make is Amazon's so big and search is so efficient on Amazon that you will just fucking win.
So you don't have to buy ads directing people to Amazon?
I would. I would buy Amazon ads within Amazon, but I'm also
worried.
Would
you buy Facebook ads?
Yes,
you
I
recommend
would.
Facebook
yes,
ads.
I would.
Like Facebook
yes,
over
I would.
Amazon?
No. In an Amazon, in the execution that we just talked about, I would buy Amazon ads for Amazon within Amazon. Mm. But I will say this. The reason I'm not talking about ads is I want to be really practical. We're talking about Johnny Crest. Johnny went from making $200,000 a year. He's got a little bit of savings and he's taking this leap of faith because fucking James and Gary told him to. And I'm scared and I want him to win. So I don't want him to do anything other than spend 18 hours a day trading, buying stuff and selling stuff. By the way, he also on Saturday can take his, you know, he used to on Saturday have to make a deck for the big presentation to Walmart on Monday. Now he can take Ricky Crest. Ricky Crest is 6 years old, hasn't seen dad that much because dad's trying to win the corporate gig. And he's taking Ricky Crest garage sailing because now he understands the market and he doesn't have to pay the vig on Amazon, on eBay. He's now buying some Pokemon or UFC stuff for a quarter and a dollar. And he spent $100, spent 7 hours with his kid and made a $8,000 or $800 or $190 arbitrage on that day.
So this is all great advice, and obviously you gave one specific example. This
yes.
eBay, Amazon. I'm sure there's many other types of businesses and so on. You address
there are
some
you
of them.
Listen. There's a, let me give you some quick ones because
sure.
I think you did a good thing here too. I know people that became the mustard personality and are doing well, and now mustards are supporting them. Right?
How are they selling mustard?
They became the mustard guy, right? They were talking about mustard a whole lot, and eventually mustards reached out to him and say, hey, we'll give you free mustard. And that was cool at first because it was just this and that. And now mustards pay him, you know, $5,000 a month to be their consultant on social media around mustard, and then other mustards pay him for product placement. That's how.
Okay. All right. So look, just to end this, because
yeah.
I think Ask Gary V is a great book. You've given great advice in this. You've been giving great advice on this podcast. I literally want to ask a stupid question, which is, when's the last time you cried? Because you seem like so motivational and inspirational. You're doing all these great things.
That's a great question.
When's the last time you took a step back and said, oh my God, I'm sad about something? Because it almost seems like you're on a hyperdrive.
The last 4 or 5 times I've cried in my life, the last 5 times I've cried in my life have been on the passing of Lizzie's 2 grandmas, my uncle. I've only cried at funerals. The last time I cried about something besides a funeral, and I'm really kind of going through my Rolodex here because I want to answer a true question. I cried very hard in 1998, September of 1998, when Garrison Hurst broke off a 99-yard run touchdown against the Jets in overtime, and the Jets lost a heartbreaker in the opening game against the 49ers, and I cried so hard, you couldn't even imagine.
What about in a business context? Let's say
if someone screwed
you over.
The biggest thing that ever got me close to crying
was anger.
Anger a lot. I'm angry all the time. Angry every day. I'm angry at every employee that works for me right now at VaynerMedia that doesn't get how great it is of what we're doing, and they think that something is bad. I used to get very emotional and struggled quite a bit with when states would shut down Wine Library from shipping. That would happen back in the day as those laws were getting figured out, and that
Texas,
would be tough.
You mentioned
Texas
in the book.
So that's tough, right? That made me go to sleep early. When Texas shut down, I went to sleep at 5 p.m. I drove home. I believe that I'm the leader. And I believe that when you're the leader, you need to absorb all the pressure at your level. And you can't let it trickle down to anybody below you. And so very rarely in business do I ever feel overwhelmed. But that day I did. Because, you know, it's just tough to lose $3 million overnight. Like, it's just tough. And I was just sick of it. I was done, right? And so I went home because I didn't want anybody at Wine Library to see my being upset.
And then how do you bounce back from that?
I slept and I woke up and I was ready to go. That's just really what happened.
So, final thing, you mentioned you don't read a lot of books, but obviously
yes.
You have a lot of knowledge about all different aspects of business.
Yes.
What are your sources of information? Like, what are 5
people.
Sources people should check out?
People.
But you have the ability to just call up anybody. Like,
no,
you call
no,
up
no,
Jack
no,
Welch
no, no, no,
and he comes
no, no.
on your podcast.
Yes, but that's not what I do. I'm sorry. I don't mean hit up Jack Dorsey or hit up, you know, Evan Spiegel or these kind of things. 2 guys I don't know super well, just for context. I mean, I watch people. I mean, when I go to the airport tomorrow to go to St. Louis, I will spend my 30 minutes before I get on the plane, A, watching what people are saying on every social network, and B, watching what everybody's doing while they're sitting there. I mean,
like, what's an example where watching what someone
Snapchat
was doing?
I was early on Snapchat because I noticed that young kids were on Snapchat long before tech started writing about it. Like, as a matter of fact, I actually think I'm going to go to jail one day. I had my first encounter. I had a father think that I was being super inappropriate with his 14-year-old daughter because I was like checking out what she was doing on the phone, and I guess he thought I was checking her out. He thought I was some sicko.
Probably you were a little bit
of
both.
No, I wasn't. I swear to God. If she was 20, but not 14. And so, you know, so I watch people's behavior. That is my number one that's what I do for a living. I do that a lot. I watch it very seriously.
Well, Gary, thanks so much for all this advice.
Oh, I'll give you another one. I want to do some more. Always check out the Apple App Store's top 140 free apps ranking because you'll see things emerging like Musical.ly right now. Like, most people who are listening don't know what Musical.ly is, but it's a social network that's emerging, and it shows it on the ranks. And then the other—
Now, what would you do with that information?
I would download Musical.ly. I would look at what people are doing there. I would learn. I watch behavior clouds. It's very up here, right? Like, hey, 45-year-old women at bars at night are now taking selfies. That's interesting because that was only 13-year-old girls 5 seconds ago. I need to dig into this data. Then I put my analysts or people of that. I'm like, get me some data on this. Like, I start really – I have intuitions. Then I use my teammates to form stronger, more rounded opinions. So the App Store is very important to me. I also think there's things like Jason Hirschhorn's email list, right, Media Ref, and there's – Product Hunt, and there's Tech Meme, and there's Nuzzle. I think there's some nice apps out there that can help people curate content. And then there's the people like you who are putting together some of the best business podcasts in the world, and what guests are you bringing on? And that's information for people. This is not how I consume information. I consume it through watching people, but I know 99% of people do consume information.
Well, Gary, thanks so much. I do think people should consume more information through hashtag AskGaryVee.
On a serious note, I want this from you. I'm curious. I feel like you have a very good read on me. Yeah. We know each other very well.
Yeah, it's your second visit on the podcast. We've known each other a while. We've been in some of the same deals together.
That's exactly right. Is there anything from this book that, was there anything or, oh, I'm glad he, like, what was the outlier of the book, if anything? And if there's nothing, that's fine too. I'm just curious for myself, with your North Star, what happened in this book that I can use to learn from?
I think two things. I think the clouds versus dirt metaphor was very important. I don't think most people realize that. I think it's a good model to think about starting a business. I think the pathway, which I kind of had to put together from the book as opposed to being outlined, the pathway of learning, content, community, call to action is very important. Like, I think that's a headline of the book. And I think, being very serious about how you approach sincerity and authenticity in your content marketing. Too many people focus on the marketing and not the content part of that equation. So I think that's very important. Also, the fact that seeing, and again, this is a meta comment, seeing you in action in the book, how you're able to easily answer this wide variety of questions, that comes from knowledge and experience, and people should learn from that aspect as well.
So, that last part's important to me. Guys, for everybody who's listening, there's very few people that are winning at a very high level that don't have a skill set that not only that either came natural and they worked on, or they just worked on and maximized, you know, their thing in that world. We're just not patient, and we're really impatient in America, and we've become stunningly impatient at the 20-year-old level, 20 to 35-year-old level around entrepreneurship.
I think because people see so many, 22-year-olds making $1 billion getting
but
bought
they
by Facebook.
They don't. There's only like three of them.
Right.
There's Instagram, there's Snapchat, there's Uber. Like, there's 900,000 other people that are about to go out of business, be in debt, have a bad reputation for not being somebody who can build a business, like burn bridges. And we're not talking about the other thing. And I'm going to get a little bit deep here to close it. One of the reasons I want to get all this more grounded in practicality and hope that I can be, as a personality in the space, get others to start talking about this. We are not talking about depression and suicide and other very important issues in entrepreneurship, because these kids are getting told it's so easy and everybody can do it. And then they think they're losers. And it's important, man. Like, 99% of these businesses are not going to succeed.
Well, even look at yours and my track record of investing. You know, most businesses just don't work out. You
could
be an expert in every way.
I thought Yobongo was going to be the biggest app of all time.
Well, and also let's look at the sin of omission. You and I both didn't invest in Uber.
That's right. I invested in the next round. I talk about let's talk about you. I'll go further than that. I acknowledge Travis and Crush It. 2 years before Uber, the only person in the world that I acknowledged in my book, besides my family, my first business book, was the CEO of Uber, and I passed on Uber twice in the angel round, leaving $200 million on the table.
Yeah.
But, look, I want people to understand that if you make $180,000 a year in your business selling t-shirts off of your Instagram account, you are really doing a nice job. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go to my calculator, James, here. Why don't you come up with something clever to say right now, because I really want to look this up.
How do you sell $180,000 worth of t-shirts on Instagram?
Real quick, very easily.
You can put a link in.
Ready?
Like, here's where you buy them.
If you sell $180,000 a year, you're in the top 6%. Like, do you know how special that is? You create a meme kind of Instagram account. You caught pay dirt. You were on Instagram a little bit early. You know, Fuck Jerry gave you a shout out or something. You got like 100,000 people following you. You've been hacking. You've been smart about putting out content with 25 hashtags, because hashtags is the practitioner way to be discovered inside of Instagram. You had a viral post that got you going. Your buddy's dating a model and she gave you a shout out and she had 80,000 followers, and you got a little bit of a, and now you have a little base, and you went to TeePublic and created a t-shirt around it, and you posted something on Instagram and 87 people bought it. And it started your journey.
Yeah.
That's how.
All right, good. You've given us so many different business models. We've talked about everything.
I love it.
Gary, everybody go out and buy hashtag AskGaryVee. We're giving away 100 copies. We'll give you information on how to get it.
There's one final thing, James. I'm sorry. I'm
just, keep going.
I just like
keep
you
going.
So much, I don't want to leave. I want to talk to you about your Snapchat.
All right, tell me, because I don't use Snapchat.
That's what I want to fucking talk to you about.
Okay.
You, out of all the people I know in this ecosystem, have a chance to break out on Snapchat.
What should I do? I should sign up first.
You should sign up first. That's a very important first step.
It's, by the way, the only thing I probably don't use, because I use everything else.
And you know what's funny for me from afar, looking at the ecosystem, because this is what I do, I actually think you would crush. I think you would absolutely annihilate it. I think that you just you just put, you know, it's such a good medium for you because the way I view you from afar, you know, you're at meetings, you just take a little shot, you take a picture, follow a bunch of people, watch what they're doing. I have a funny feeling that you would be a very, very strong content producer around Snapchat. And here's the punchline. In 24 to 36 months, an ungodly amount of the attention of the end consumer in America will be on it. And you need to be there.
All right. I'm gonna do it. I'm going to take your advice.
You know what? Now I'm going to guilt you into it. I'm going to take this snap is going to be like you admitting, James, can you please admit that you are now going to join Snapchat?
I've totally failed in not having a Snapchat account. I'm going to join it.
When?
Today.
That's the right fucking answer.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Stansberry Radio Network.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.